Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and in today's episode, I'm speaking with Josh Wood, fitness coach for busy parents. Josh and I spoke about his TEDx talk, Six Habits for Busy Parents, and his cookbook, Macro Masala. If you like the show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode with someone who might find it helpful. Thank you so much, and as always, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes. Now, onto my conversation with Josh. Josh Wood, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm super excited to speak with you. We have just kind of chatted that our target audience or the people that we work with and speak to is pretty similar. So I'm looking forward to hearing all your tips about how to really achieve a lot in terms of your physique and live a healthy life, even you're a busy parent. But yeah, I'd love to hear from you, Josh. What's the main thing you're excited for the listener to learn today?
Honestly, if I can help people simplify, I'm happy. Don't do too much. We all get caught up doing too much, and the easiest thing in the world is to just get caught up in that rat race. And the best thing you can do is cut stuff out, simplify.
Amen to that. I look forward to hearing your strategies for how to do that because it does seem and sound very straightforward, but in the end, we all struggle to do so. Yeah, Josh, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are today, whether that's like literally or also in terms of professional development?
Yeah, I mean that's a big topic. I'm if you're listening, as you'll hear that I sound North American because I grew up in the Midwest in the United States. But I left the country when I was 18, went abroad, ended up in Australia at 19. I've been here for 17 years. This is the year that I've been abroad as many years as I lived in the US. But the accent sticks around. I live here in Tasmania. That was a long round the world trip, but it started off in the UK. Just a simple backpacker, met a nice Australian girl, moved to Australia, got married. We have kids. This is where we live in Tasmania. But professionally, my interests started off in combat sports. I was a scrawny computer nerd in high school, and I was working in a computer shop one day. And the long and short of it is, I said, you know what? I need to learn how to fight. And so I started looking into options. I got involved with MMA and spent a number of years in that sport, learning how to be detrimental to the body. And it actually awakened an interest in working with the body. And so I started off in manual therapies. My first career was in massage. I spent a number of years running a clinic and teaching at a massage school in Melbourne, in Victoria, Australia, and just kept taking steps after that, learning a little bit more, got into training people, personal training, started working strength and conditioning facility in Melbourne, branched out a bit and started learning more manual therapies, got into dry needling, did an undergraduate in health science with a major in traditional Chinese medicine, and then just kept learning stuff and figuring out new ways of trying to work with people, and eventually did my graduate certificate in strength and conditioning. Kept pursuing training and ended up deciding that training people is the best place for me. I didn't like the clinical side of stuff. I didn't like sitting in a little room all day, just in this little stuffy room, trying to do your best to help people. But I found that in that space, although I worked in a more alternative setting, the mindset was the same as people who are just looking for that pill to fix them. Everybody came in and they're like, listen, I don't want anything to do with Western medicine. I don't want to be stuck on medication for the rest of my life. So can you just give me some sort of esoteric formula of herbs that I can just take forever instead? And I kept having this conversation of like, there's all these lifestyle things that we should be looking at that'll help you feel better. What's your activity like? Let's look at your diet. Are you getting sunlight? Are you eating real food? How's your sleep? What's your stress? And every time, almost every single time, no matter how bad that individual was and how unwell they felt consistently, they're always like, just give me the thing, stick some needles in me, give me some magic potion. And I finally just said, enough of this. I was working in gyms anyway at the time, mostly as a boxing coach at that point. And I just realized everybody I work with in the gym came in because they're ready to do the work. They're in there for me to help them figure out what they need to do, as opposed to just passively sit by and hope they get fixed. And that was sort of a breaking point for me. I was just like, all right, I'm not working in clinics anymore, not doing anything in these little stuffy boxes. It's like I'm in gyms. I help people who are ready to make the change. And then a few years back, I took it all online.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sh sharing a bit about yourself. And what I love the most about it is like how broad and well-rounded at the same time it seems. I mean, boxing to Chinese medicine to clinics to working online and really cool. And we have a few things in common. In university, my degree was sport health and prevention. So obviously focus on prevention, yet.
Yep.
But when I finished with that, or throughout the university degree as well, I did sort of an internship in a clinic where people would go to with, let's say, rotator cuff injuries or knee injuries or whatever. And many of the people there were there for like the third time. And you were like, clearly, this whole prevention thing is not
Yeah.
working because, first of all, they're already there and they're injured. And
Yep.
second of all, it's the third time. So, like, what the heck are we doing here? We're not doing our job properly. And so, yeah, I like how you were like, no, there has to be a different way to help people not even get to this place and to get into the minds of them that truly there is no magic pill and it's rooted much deeper. And so, I saw that you had a TEDx talk, which was titled Six Habits to Eat Like an Adult. And I mean, you mentioned that food or like what are you putting into your body is such a big part of anything, like how we're feeling, if we're getting injured, if we have energy for our kids, for our job, and so on. So I would love to hear about these six habits.
Yeah, so that when it comes to nutrition, I'm not dogmatic. I'm not a proponent of any one diet or any one way of eating. I don't think humans really work like sports cars. Like we don't need necessarily like the super high octane like fancy fuel. We're more like tractors. There's a bunch of different things that work well to make us run, and it's just going to kind of be a bit individual. So I'm not dogmatic when it comes to those things. I think there's certain nutrients and ways of eating that humans do well with. I'm a big proponent of ancestral eating, as well as local and seasonal diets. But outside of that, I'm just kind of like, you know what? Let's just figure out what makes you feel good. The most important thing is how do you look, feel, and perform, and what's your relationship to food? So the six habits to eat like an adult came out of my interest of trying to codify, like, how do we have a better relationship with food? And the Eat Like an Adult guide was the first sort of resource I put together for that. And it was actually something I designed for my sister when I was visiting Minnesota a bunch of years ago. My sister and her husband wanted some help with their diet, their nutrition. They got young kids too. And so they're like, you know, we want to be healthier for our kids. And that's a lot of the type of people I work with. So I was like, all right, how do I create something for them basically just to put on their fridge to keep them on track when I'm not around? Because I don't get back to the US much. And so I came up with this Eat Like an Adult guide and this basic like six habits on how to have like a decent relationship with food without having to be too neurotic about it. Now, I'm not against calorie counting and counting your macros and being really granular about that stuff. I use that a lot with people who have very specific goals. But in general, people just need to have a better relationship with food for all health outcomes. So that was kind of the background on that TEDx talk. And then it was gosh, early last year, maybe March, The Lancet came out with a study looking at obesity rates over the last 20 years. And that was when we sort of knew as an industry that obesity is now a greater risk to world health than hunger is. There's more obese people than starving people in the world, which is, you know, a win for humanity. Like we've been a species that has been starving since the first day, but now that is not the problem. It's an overconsumption problem. So I started looking at that from the lens as a parent. You know, I've got young kids, I've got lots of friends with kids, family with kids. And it's like, well, you know, 37 million of those billion people are kids under five that are overweight or obese. 390 million adolescents.
Wow.
Like, you just look at those numbers and you're like, I can guarantee you most of them are not going out and buying their own groceries and cooking their own meals. Who feeds them? Parents. So I framed that talk around, how can we as parents or guardians or aunts and uncles or people who just have young people looking up to them, how can we set a good example? That's, what we do. And so the six habits is really about creating that healthier relationship with food, ideally to influence the next generation. And so I kind of kept it simple. Do you want me to start going through those?
Please, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I'm super hooked.
So I'll try and keep it concise. So the first habit is probably the most important and the one that I get the most feedback on, because it always comes up and people are like, oh, I do this all the time now because it's such an intuitive thing. And it's called the Apple test. And the idea is, if I'm sitting at my desk drawer here and I'm digging around looking for something sweet, I know there's a jelly bean somewhere. Or if I'm in like in the pantry, at 10 in the morning or 3 in the afternoon or 8 o'clock at night, and I'm looking for that sweet thing. Once we start to recognize it, we need to stop and ask ourselves, am I actually hungry? And the test is, if Coach Josh was to show up in your kitchen for whatever reason, with a bright red delicious apple, would you eat it? If you're hungry, you'd eat the apple. And so the question is, well, are you hungry enough to eat an apple? If the answer is yes, you're hungry, eat an apple then, eat some real food. If the answer is no, I just want that block of chocolate, that Snickers bar, or that glass of wine, well, and you're not hungry, you're craving. And that's usually related to something else, stress or sleep. Maybe you're not actually eating enough or eating well enough, or you're dehydrated, whatever. But if you're hungry, you eat the apple. And so that's kind of where it all starts, is just actually learning to recognize hunger signals. And we're so overfed that we forget as a society what it is to be hungry. And we forget also that hunger is not going to kill you. We're so afraid of being hungry, that the first sign of something, we're reaching for whatever. But actually just learning to listen to those hunger signals is a really, really powerful thing that you can do to just take charge of what you eat.
That's amazing. Yeah, before we move on to the next habit, I really want to touch on that because sometimes when I start a dieting phase with a client or they want to lose weight, and within the first few weeks, it's like, oh, I'm so hungry. And it's kind of like that. It's not a complaint, but it's sort of like, how can we fix this? And I'm exactly as you're saying, like, number one,
Do we
you're
need to fix
not
it?
going to die. Number two, this is a great sign because it actually shows you are intaking less than what your body is burning. So what we're doing here is working. Like, recognize this as like a, yay, we're doing things right. And number three, most of the time it does come down to like, can we just drink something first? Maybe you're just bored. Maybe you're lonely. Like, what
Yeah.
is it? So like looking into why are you actually craving this and that, or distinguishing between hunger and cravings as well? So I love
Yeah.
that test because I mean, an apple is also something sweet. So it would like if you,
Yep.
it's not like saying like, oh, why don't you just eat like broccoli or something that's a little bit more controversial.
Well, it's funny because I've seen a bunch of people try and like do other takes on the Apple test. Like, I'm not the only guy that's talked about the Apple test. I'm sure it's been in the collective conscious at some point somewhere for a while. But I've heard people like, just do the carrot test, just do the broccoli test. And I'm like, bro, no one's gonna do that. And the reason I like apples so much, like actually I love apples, it's one of my favorite things, but like you said, it's sweet. It's got a textural component. It's crunchy if it's a good one. But it's also got a fiber in it called pectin, and pectin absorbs water and it actually makes you feel full. So it's got so many good things. And the antioxidants, there's more antioxidants in apples than there are in the supposed superfood acai berries, like
I
there's,
did not know
yeah,
that.
this is,
That's great. I mean, I
yeah,
knew
it's one of those
it.
things.
Oh, amazing.
It's actually a pretty high antioxidant count. Like, it's just an all around great option.
Amazing. And it's cheap in most countries anyway. So,
That's
yes.
right.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the second habit. I'm really interested.
All right. I'm gonna have to count these on my finger. Okay. So, first habit is Apple test, and everything else kind of feeds off of that. It's like, okay, have we decided we're hungry? Yes, no. All right. Then how do we make decisions? The first one is choosing better. And so the idea is, like, especially in, my homeland in the US, food is big. Every time I go, I only go back every like 3 to 5 years, but like I go there and I'm like, this is so much. There's so much food, and everything needs to be upsized. And like, it's like a half a penny more, and you can get a liter of soda, and it's just crazy. But the idea of choosing better is that when we have those choices, every time you choose the better option, that has a compounding effect over time. And so it's like, you get the meal, the burger with the fries and the drink because it's $6 or something, and they're like, do you want to upsize your soda for an extra penny, and we'll quadruple size it? And it's like, choosing better means choosing the smaller drink because it's better for you, and just enjoying that treat, enjoying that thing for what it is. And if you're actually thirsty, then just drink some water. Like, enjoy your little soda. You don't need to upsize. So it's just about, like, every time you make those small decisions to do something better, it becomes easier and easier to do that. It doesn't even become a choice after a while. It's just what you do. So compounding with choosing better.
Yeah, I really like that because it builds confidence as well that you can choose better. Like, I think if you're so in the habit of getting the burger or whatever it might be, making that one choice of like, oh, this time I ordered a steak and baked potato as opposed to the fries. It was still delicious. I'm still full. Yes, I kind of eyed the burger that was on the plate next to me, but I managed to do it. And then next time you can do it again, and you can do it again. And yeah, I think this is a really great point that it is something that you exercise, and it's like a muscle, exactly like you're saying. So building on that, and then you can perhaps learn to go for a walk, even though you wanted to sit on the couch. And yeah, it really is something that compounds.
That's right. And so it's just that little bit, that little thing. If you every time you make that little better decision, it just becomes easier and easier every time. Like you said, it's like a muscle.
Yeah, absolutely. So if someone is thinking though, where do I even start? Because there are so many, like if we're saying like make a better decision all the time and the whole day is sort of not routine at the moment or is filled with less optimal decisions, where do you even start?
It just depends what decision you're making at that moment. There's a thing about decisions. There's a thing about willpower, and that it is a finite resource. You have limited willpower, and the more times that you have to utilize it, the less you have at the end of the day. And so if you're trying to decide, where do I start choosing better? Start chronologically. Start at the beginning of the day. Whatever decisions you have to make first, make those the good ones, because that's when you have the most willpower to make those changes, but they don't have to be big.
Yeah, I think harnessing that time of like when is my willpower strongest is really, really powerful. So for example, if you know like from 4 p.m. onwards, your willpower is super, super small, or you're basically just driven by automation, then set the second half of your day up in a way where it's already planned out. Like maybe you've chucked in
Yes.
some food into the crock pot in the morning so that you have a good dinner waiting for you when you come home from work, as opposed to
Bingo.
like, oh, what am I going to have? Or maybe you have put the chocolate in the back of the cupboard as opposed to leaving it on the counter, and instead on the counter you have some beautiful apples, so when you're coming home from work and you have that afternoon craving, you're going to grab the apple and instead of the chocolate. So I think like, yeah, harnessing that power and planning and preparing during that time can be really helpful.
Yeah, and that's, why a lot of people do their meal prep on a Sunday. You've had your day of rest, you have your day to, recharge from the week, and then you prep on the Sunday when you're feeling a little bit more motivated, a little bit more capable, because by Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you're going to make terrible choices if you don't have everything set up.
Yeah, absolutely. So okay, we have had the second habit now with compounding interest and like making a good decision, just a small good decision
Choose
building on
better.
that. Where do we go from here?
Number three. Number three is one of those ones that's much easier said than done. And every time I give this talk, or if you watch the TEDx talk, there's a nervous chuckle in the crowd. Number three is don't eat your emotions. right? It's like, yeah, okay, of course. But what does that mean? How do we do that? The idea is that every time we are trying to manage our emotions through self-medication, through food, through alcohol, whatever, we are losing the ability to actually properly regulate them. So we need to create or find coping mechanisms. We need to find ways to manage our emotional state that aren't based around food. And so if we're running through like the Apple test first, are we hungry? Well, that's probably going to be managing your emotions. Because if we're hungry, we're not going to be reaching for the junk because we're mad, sad, or distressed out. So really, it's just starting to recognize that and remember that I shouldn't be feeding myself because of how I feel emotionally. If your stomach's growling, that's different. It's a different feeling. But I mean emotional feelings. We shouldn't be looking at the pantry because we feel a certain way.
Yeah, I think that's something that's probably very likely, very much tied with that obesity epidemic because we're so used to instant gratification and a very easy way to like soothe emotions immediately, at least, is through food. Instead of thinking, how is this going to make me feel in 2 hours? Or how can I actually deal with this and get that whatever issue it might be out of the way and then eat something if I'm still hungry? So I think like in that instance, when you are first recognizing what emotion you're dealing with or that you're about to emotionally eat, I'm like inserting just some sort of pause, whether that means, okay, I really want this, but I'm gonna go for 2 laps around the house. And if I still want it, I'm gonna have a little bit of it. Or being like, I'm gonna call my best friend and bitch about whatever I want to bitch about. And then, after that, I might feel better already. Or just get a good workout in or something that changes your emotional state in that way. And then without judgment, thinking about, do I still want that or not?
Yeah, and I mean the big issue is food is very effective at making us feel good in the short term for a little while, so that we forget that it was not a good idea. We're just like, I feel bad, eat the Snickers bar, I feel great, and then you feel bad again, and you don't realize the food didn't really do anything, and then you reach for more.
I'm sure you've dealt with this probably through your clients or perhaps even yourself, but if someone says to you, Josh, I'm so embarrassed. Last night I was like in this eating frenzy. And I just couldn't stop. I felt like food was controlling me. I feel so gross about myself. Like, A, how do I prevent that next time? And B, what do I do today? Should I cut my calories? I want to go for a run. I want to like out exercise everything. What do I do?
It really depends on the individual. As far as preventing it, like we mentioned before, making sure we're prepared for success, making sure we have our food choices set up, making sure we don't go grocery shopping when you're hungry, first of all. But also don't have it's like if you're like, I just can't stop eating Tim Tams, it's like, well, why are they in your house? If you're putting them in your house, you are setting yourself up to fail. If you know that is your weakness, do not have them in the house. And that's an adult conversation that a lot of people don't like to have. But it's true. It's kind of like, oh, I just can't stop drinking my glass and a half of wine every night. Why do you keep buying it? Like, why do I have to have this conversation with you all the time? You know the problem. Just stop setting yourself up for failure. And people don't like hearing that, but it is part of eating like an adult.
And then how do you propose that person would go about like things the next day, how they're feeling?
I'm gonna get to that in the last habit.
Okay, perfect. Cool.
All right, that'll be habit six. So we'll circle back around because otherwise I'll be jumping all over the place.
Sounds great. Okay,
So we
let's go
got
to
what we
the
had: Apple test,
yeah,
choose
pump up.
better. We've had don't eat your emotions. Next one is treats or treats. This one's one of my favorites because it catches people out a lot of time. So if we look at like what is a treat. A treat is something that is special or earned. It's a rare occasion, something that is in response to something good happening. We have a reward. How often do you hear someone say, "Oh, I'm just gonna treat myself. I'm gonna have a little treat." Every day, all the time. And if you're having this treat every day at the same time, you're having it every week at the same time. If it's habitual, if it's a pattern, it is not a treat, it's your diet. And the number of people, when I say this to people, the number of people are like, oh, so wine's a really big part of my diet. It's like you can't treat yourself with it. You don't get a treat just because you went to your 9 to 5. You don't get a treat just because you made it from waking up to going back to bed. That's not a treat. You're either coping or it's just habitual. And you know, those are both fine things. You need to just recognize them. But if it's happening all the time, it ain't a treat.
Yeah, absolutely. I think sometimes it also actually goes into even just like educating what technically is a treat. Let's just say some people do think a muffin is like a decent breakfast option or like a scone or whatever it might be. And you're like, actually, this is basically nothing but carbs and fats. And you're missing any fiber, you're missing any protein. There is no fruit in there or whatsoever, at least none that you can count. We should categorize this as a treat or even some cereals and like
Oh,
things like
yeah.
this, or where people are like, oh, well, but this is, bread or homemade pizza or whatever. Well, it's still probably not, it shouldn't be on your menu all the time. So like kind of categorizing, okay, what are we considering as a treat? And I like that you pointed out alcohol because it really, I don't think many people register that as a quote unquote treat.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one that comes up a lot. I did a talk or a podcast with a lady at the beginning of the year who runs an alcohol coaching business. So she's, you know, former alcoholic, works with former alcoholics, help them sort of manage these things. And we did a like a back and forth with my 6 habits on eating and the things that she does with people with alcoholism. And it's very, very similar. The way that people treat alcohol and the way that people treat food are very similar. And there's a lot of crossover.
Oh, I can absolutely imagine. And I think just framing it as a treat as well helps us talk to ourselves in a different way. I often say to my clients as well, talk to yourself in the way that you would talk to your child. Like you're not gonna, ideally, not gonna give them a treat every single day. Or as you said, like if there's a special occasion, yes. Or
Yes.
maybe at least make them choose between one or the other and not being like, okay, you can have one in the morning, one in the evening. No, it should be one or the other. And the majority of the diet should still be whole foods and something that's actually nourishing. And so, kind of, yeah, recognizing that or talking to yourself in the same way, I do think
I
is.
have that argument all the time with my 5-year-old. All the time.
That and that's just another thing of like teaching delaying gratification, right? Like if you choose the treat now, you can't have one later. If you want to have the treat later, you can have one now. So you choose. It's up
And
to
it
you.
should be earned. That's the whole point of treats, is that they are earned things. You know, did you have an exceptionally hard day? Like it was something unusual today. Did you finish a big project? You know, or is someone coming into town you haven't seen forever? Whatever. Treat yourself. But not every day, because something like that doesn't happen every day.
I like it. Awesome. Let's go to point number five.
Where are
We
we
had the
at?
apple
Five?
test.
Okay. Yep. Apple test. Choose better. Don't eat your emotions. Treats are treats. Good enough. Good enough is good enough. And so the idea with this one is sometimes you have to settle. Sometimes you just can't be the perfectionist if you really want to make progress. I work with a number of people who are perfectionists, and a big part of that being an issue is perfection isn't real. We can't have perfection. And so what people who call themselves perfectionists end up doing is they end up doing something that they're trying very hard to do perfectly, failing at that because it's an impossible task, and then doing it not at all. It's all or nothing. And too many people get caught up with this. And we need to understand that you can do really well when you learn how to just do good enough. And so the big issue that a lot of people have is not the food they prep at home, it's when they go out to eat and they're not sure what to get. And you know, I'm in Australia, so a big part of food culture is pub meals. So I always use that as an example. You go out to the pub, you know, you have some options. You got a fish, you got a steak, you might have a schnitzel or a parma. You know, you have all these nice protein options, and people still go for like the mushroom carbonara and like piles of greasy pasta with the side of just greasy chips and a pint of beer. And it's like, you don't have to do that. If you want to do that, own it. That's fine. You're an adult, you can make your own decisions. But good enough means that you need to find something that's going to be okay and not derail you too much for the sake of a social event. And my example is always if someone gave you like a plate of food with a handful of some sort of meat or protein, a side salad and like a dinner roll, most people would be like, okay, maybe it's not perfect, but it's good enough. You slice that dinner roll in half, stack it together, that's a cheeseburger. And you can always find one of those at the pub, So it's like if in doubt, a cheeseburger is going to be good enough. Just lay off the sides, lay off the beer, and you're going to be fine.
That's a really helpful tip, I think. And yes, I too, well, and in some aspects, am a recovering perfectionist, and in other aspects, I certainly work with a lot of women that are perfectionists. And I mean, it's easy to get caught up in that, but it definitely encourages all or nothing thinking. It encourages a bad relationship with food, and just encourages this whole starting over cycle. And the starting part is like the hard part of any endeavor. So if we have to like get into gear over and over and over again, like why don't we just keep going with that momentum? And to your example there, maybe the first time you're thinking of this concept, you are choosing the cheeseburger. And maybe the next time you're like, okay, the cheeseburger was cool. Maybe I can just have half of the bun and I'll eat the side salad in addition to that. And maybe the time after that, you're choosing the Caesar salad and asking for a little bit less dressing, or like it, like again, it builds.
And each
It's
time you choose better.
yeah,
Start off with good enough, and then start choosing better.
very cool. Yeah, and I think it's something that's doable, even if you're traveling a lot, even if you are quite social, even if someone's inviting you and they're just providing the meal options for you and you don't necessarily have anything else to choose. I think again, it's empowering because in the end, we're the only people that put stuff in our mouth, ideally anyway. And so it take ownership, right?
Hopefully.
Yeah. Awesome. So I
Yeah,
can't wait to
exactly.
hear about the 6 point.
Yeah. I'm just gonna take a sidebar here just to
Please,
give you a
yes.
sound bite, just eat cheeseburgers. That's if in doubt, get a cheeseburger. I'm honestly like the older I get, the more I'm like, wait a second. If you have a high quality cheeseburger, it's like you can have like a whole grain bun, a slice of cheese, some salad, and a chunk of meat, and it's amazing. Just eat cheeseburgers. It's like a superfood.
That's awesome. I love it.
Okay, habit six. Mistakes happen. Mistakes happen. There is absolutely no way around this. And the sooner you accept that as something that is inevitable, the better off you're going to be. A mistake is anything that is counter to what you're trying to achieve. Mindless eating may be a mistake. It's definitely a mistake if you're trying to do something with your health, if you're trying to improve your health, if you're trying to lose body fat, if you're trying to get stronger. That becomes a mistake. And I mean this as a way of defining a mistake against your goals. A mistake is something that is counter to your goals. If you don't have goals, well, everything's a mistake then. Or nothing's a mistake, maybe. But the idea is that we need to start seeing mistakes as inevitable and as speed bumps, not cliffs. It's not all or nothing. It's a speed bump. And so when you've had that binge night because you had one too many drinks and you're out with your friends, you don't really remember what's going on, the answer to what you do tomorrow is just keep driving. You hit a speed bump, you don't stop. You don't stop driving because there's a bump on the road. You just keep going. You don't have to do anything different. It's different if you are very specific with weight loss or performance. This is not talking about athletes or, stage preparation bodybuilders. I'm talking about normal people just trying to be a bit healthier. Just keep driving. The mistakes happen. See the speed bump. Keep going. And this is such a common conversation that I have to have where, I'll get a new client who's doing a food journal or we're doing a food journal check-in for someone at some point in their health and fitness journey. And, I always see this thing where it's like, oh yeah, sorry, Saturday was a bit crazy. I had this work thing. And so I'm like, okay, so what'd you do? So I ate a whole pizza and a bucket of wings and, a few beers. And it's like, so can you just Tell me exactly, just quantify it for me. How many slices of pizza do you have to eat for it to be a social event? This is such a common mistake when it comes to social life and work and things like that. But everybody does the same thing. They freak out, and then the rest of the weekend is thrown out the window. You go to a birthday for some kids, you get a slice of cake, you keep eating cake. You're like, oh well, I guess I might as well keep eating all the other stuff in the, junk food buffet, and then tomorrow's thrown out the window too. No, just eat the cake. Say, all right, well, that's probably good enough. We'll just do better tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny and not funny really at the same time how that just snowballs in our mind of like, oh, I already messed up. Kind of like that whole analogy that everyone always uses with the one tire is slashed, so you go out and
Slash
slash
them
the other
all.
ones because you think it's not worth fixing that one. Or yeah, anyway, I think this is a really, really good point because if we anticipate mistakes to happen, if we know it's not even an option, they are going to come up. Like you can have the perfect plan, but something is going to come up. Your child gets sick, you get sick, you have an injury, this and that food isn't available at the restaurant that you plan to go to. So like it's going to happen, so you better be prepared with a plan B, or just being prepared to like, I need a pivot, and that's absolutely fine. And as you mentioned, it ties really nicely into the other points as well, and into the point of like, just move on. And even as athletes, or even as people that are prepping for a photo shoot or a stage, something like that, there's possibly mistakes happening there as well. We're all just human. So, again, like the more we can embrace that in general and be kind with ourselves and be like, it wasn't ideal, I'll be transparent, but at least I didn't let one and a half slices turn into four.
That's
So,
right. That's right.
yeah, absolutely. But
Absolutely.
yeah, I think you've given a lot of amazing tips. I'm super curious though, because you said you are a dad as well. And something that I often see and hear is when someone starts their fitness journey, they're like, oh, well, I had to cook like four different meals, one for myself, one for my husband, one for the kids, one for, I don't know, the dog or something like that. And you're like, what? Why? And I know that that's something that you're big about as well. Like, don't, like, kids should eat well also. My question to you is, how do you teach that to your clients? And how do you do that with your own kids?
Well, it's pretty easy, really. I think the problem is not in the action. The problem is in people's heads. The way I think about it is across all time and space, people eat the food that's there, or they don't eat food. Now, obviously, in modern life, that we don't have that issue, especially in the West, especially in affluent societies. There's always options. So what we do in our house is pretty simple. It's like we're gonna make food, and we tell the kids. So my oldest son just turned 5. My youngest is 18 months or something. He's 2 in November. So it's like, he doesn't really have much conversational skills. But my older one has too many conversational skills. So we let him in, and like, this is what we're eating. This is what we're having. What would you like on this night? And so we all have a conversation around food. And if we do some food that he might not be sure about or might not like, the only rule we have is that you don't have to like anything. There's no way we can make you like it. So there's no worries about that, but you do have to try everything. And then you can decide if you don't like it. And then we have safe foods. And we have safe foods in the fridge, which is usually just yogurt. It's like, so are you happy with, are you happy to eat this? If you're not going to eat enough of it, would you like some yogurt? And we eat a lot of yogurt. I go down to the Indian grocer near us, and you can get 2 kilo buckets for about $9. So we go through a lot of yogurt, and it's just an easy thing. I'm perfectly happy for my kids to live off of yogurt and fruit. So it's like, okay, well, if you don't like it, great. If you do like it, great. Here's some yogurt and fruit, no problem. You're getting the food you need. You're getting some good energy. You're getting the protein. I'm fine. And that's, I think, is the simplest system. I do have friends and people I work with. They're like trying to do weird stuff for their weight loss diet or muscle gain diet, whatever it is. And I'm like, just eat real food and feed it to everybody. Like, that doesn't, what are you doing? What are you eating that other people won't eat? Especially for dinner. It's one thing, like, during the day, if you want to live off of protein shakes and fruit or whatever, fine. But what is all this stuff happening at dinner? People like feed their kids weird junk that they wouldn't eat and then try to eat healthy themselves. And I'm just like, that doesn't make sense. Get your spouse on board. Everybody should be able to eat healthy, whole food.
I think that's a really good point. I like that you have a safe or safe foods because I mean, whether that's yogurt for someone or it, for someone else, it might be having a bunch of rice in the fridge and adding some eggs to that or oatmeal. Like
Eggs are
whatever.
another one. Like, you want
Yeah.
us to fry you an egg or something? 'Cause I have chickens, so we got lots of
Then,
eggs.
I mean, that's even better if you have your own chickens as well. But yeah, I think that's it really I'm sometimes I feel like I'm easy to talk because I don't have any children, but I have seen families where it works really well. Let's just say they want to have a taco night. So everyone can kind of fill their own taco. Like the mom that's
Great.
on date night might, or not on date, that's on a diet, she might make a lettuce wrap and have the same filling as the husband, or the husband might just
Exactly.
double load on cheese and whatever because he wants to gain more muscle, and the child might be like, "Oh, I don't like this green stuff, but I'm gonna have the some other,
Yes.
like something like this." Or you cook
That's yeah, like
chicken
those
and fries.
deconstructed meals
Yeah.
work really well. Nachos are another good one. Like I do kangaroo nachos. Well, it's Australia, so I do kangaroo nachos, and it's one of those things. It's like you just kind of put what you want on that. It's
Yeah.
just, flavorful meat with some corn chips. That's no different than a tortilla. You have as much as you want or as little as you want. You put your toppings on it. There's lots of protein, bit of carbs and veg. Easy. So those type of like deconstructed meals are a great option for families, and they're also low effort.
Very cool. I have actually had kangaroo meat before, and it's absolutely, I mean, it tastes like a
It's
great
great.
steak. Yeah, in the end,
Yeah,
like
it's fine.
red meat.
Just very lean.
Yeah. Well, to the point of meals, I want to talk just a tiny bit about your cookbook because I saw you have a
Oh,
cookbook
yeah.
out,
Yes.
Macro Masala, however you.
Macro masala. Yeah.
Yeah. So what inspired you to write it and what can people expect in this cookbook? Is that family friendly as well, I guess?
It is. It is. Actually, I've had a number of people send me photos of their kids learning how to cook the dishes,
Oh,
which
amazing.
is super cool.
Yeah.
So it's a bit niche. So it's a Indian cookbook. And so the idea started in 2023. One of my clients is trained as a chef in India. And I was like, hey, Ed, you wanna help me put together a cookbook? 'Cause I love cooking, I love Indian food, I like flavor. We've been sharing recipes and stuff, and he'd been giving me some things to try. I was like, you wanna help me put together a cookbook? He's like, yeah, sure. Like, what are you thinking? It's like, I want to put together, some Indian recipes, some basic, non-veg and veg options. I actually want to have like how to make a real chai lot, like a real chai brewed chai in there, a couple desserts, but I want to try and skew everything towards being more macro friendly. And he's like, yeah, sure. I'm like, what kind of timeline? I'm like, oh, 3, 4 months, something like that. I was thinking should be able to build, knock it out in a quarter. Anyway, it took us 18 months. And like the whole thing was like, all right, how do we have like real awesome, wholesome, spice centered traditional Indian food and make it as healthy as possible? And so like my big part in that is the nutrition stuff. So every recipe has the calories and macro breakdown, and it also has a barcode to scan directly into MyFitnessPal.
Amazing.
So they're all foods in the MyFitnessPal library for ease of tracking. But also, even if you don't want to do that, it's like got all the nutrition breakdown of each one. And the beginning of the book, it's all primer on spices. So like, what are all the spices used? Where do they come from? What are their names? And like, how to make your own garam masala and toast your own cumin seeds. So it's got a lot of that front end, like culinary art to it. But the recipes themselves are really quite simple. All of them can be accomplished in around 30-ish minutes,
Amazing.
and they're great. There's a good like variety of recipes in there, from different ways to make dal, to how to properly cook rice, to chickpea dishes, a lot of paneer. I'm a big fan of paneer, so like Indian cheese, cottage cheese type stuff, and then meat dishes. So it's a big variety of things, and it's all sort of tailored around making sure you can have actually good food when you're prepping.
Very cool. Like, I love that it comes with macros and just in general the nutritional breakdown. But more than anything, I mean, I also love Indian cuisine, but most of the time it is super fatty, super high in cal, like due to the ghee and
So much
coconut
sugar, so
cream and
much oil.
that
Yeah.
too.
And
So,
traditionally that stuff wasn't really a big part of the cuisine. That's more of a recent addition.
oh,
And
interesting.
when I'm talking to Indian friends and people who spent time in India, like you go rural, they're not adding all that. It's
Interesting.
primarily industrial, it's primarily modernized, and then in the West, most of that food is tailored to Western audiences, which means a lot of grease and a lot of sugar. So we stripped all that back and kept the flavors while keeping it high, basically high protein Indian recipes.
Super cool. I'm definitely going to make sure to link that in the show notes. Josh, thank you
Thank
so
you.
much for sharing those six habits with us. That was very insightful. And yes, everybody has to go and check out the cookbook and the TED Talk, and nonetheless as well. So I will be linking that. And I just want to thank you for your time. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Josh. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow. And remember, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go. If you're looking for premium supplements, our partner, Fat Muscle Project, has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more. And feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.